Good evening, everybody. Thank you to the DLM for helping us start this meeting on time. It is the Future Melbourne Committee meeting. It's number 60, and it's Tuesday the 16th of July, and it's 5:30 p.m, and we're declaring the meeting open. I welcome councillors, management, and members of the public in attendance this evening. Thank you for coming to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, cultural and sporting significance. Today we are proud to say that Melbourne is a significant gathering place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live. And whilst we go to every effort to make sure that we're not filming people unnecessarily, we may inadvertently capture your image on our live streaming, so please be aware that that may happen. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of this meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of our council business team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. Checking mine. And the agenda tonight comprises three reports from management. Apologies have been received, thank you, Councillor, from Councillors Francis Gilley and Pinder. I advise members of the committee this evening and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Councillors, if any of us this evening have either a direct or an indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee this evening, please disclose the type and nature of that interest prior to consideration of the item. First order of business this evening is to actually confirm the minutes of our previous meeting, and I'm calling on a councillor to please move a resolution to adopt the minutes of open meeting number 59 held on Tuesday 2 July 2019. Councillor Rees? Yeah, you were at that meeting. And a seconder? Councillor Leppett, thank you so much. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. It's unanimous and I declare the motion carried. We are off and running. I ask councillors, are there any matters arising from those minutes that you would like to discuss this evening? None? Thank you. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code. In relation to agenda item 6.1, which is Waste and Resource Recovery Strategy 2030, we have had requests to speak from Vincent Ryan, Transition Town Kensington, thank you, and also Artemis Paticci. Did I get it right? Oh, so good. Glad I've done it this time. South Bank Sustainability Group and South Bank Residents Association, thank you very much. Items of correspondence also received from Vincent Ryan and Artemis Paticci. In relation to agenda item 6.2, which is our Melbourne Music Week for 2019, we've had a request to speak from Chris Thrum and an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. And in relation to agenda item 6.3, which is post-travel report by Lord Mayor Salikap, Bandung, Jakarta in Indonesia and Guangzhou, Nanjing, Tianjin and Beijing in China, May 2019, we've had a request to speak from Chris Thrum and an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. I advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is being considered. You have 3 minutes to address the committee, and it is the intention of the committee to adhere to that time limit. To assist, we have a countdown timer on the wall here. It has a beep that goes when you have 1 minute remaining and then another beep when your time is up. And if at that time you could finalise your remarks and take your seat, that would be fantastic. Thank you very much. At the start of each meeting, in accordance with our Council's Meeting Procedures Code, we allow a 15-minute period for questions from the public. We ask that questions not be longer than 90 seconds. We ask that they please be questions and not submissions. And we otherwise really look forward to hearing from members of our public and citizens of Melbourne in relation to issues that are important to them. So if you have a question at this time, if you could raise your hands, we will get names and then we'll ask you to come up one by one to the lectern. And I can see a hand up already, which is terrific. Your name, please.
Luke
Buckmaster. Wow. Like the artist?
Yes, my grandfather.
Oh, I've got your family in my office. That's lovely. Yes, well done, Luke. Wonderful images of Melbourne. Any other questions for now? None at this stage. All right, Luke, you have the lectern to yourself. Please come up. Our head of governance, legal, and a whole lot of other things. Just kindly turn the microphone on. Thank you, Keith. Luke, fire away. Thank you.
I've emailed the council with information about my question, which I'll now ask. And this question is for each of the councillors. Do you support a climate emergency declaration for the City of Melbourne? Professor James Henson from NASA is among many scientists who've described the current climate crisis as a planetary emergency. Last year, the UN Secretary General warned us that humanity now faces a direct existential threat. So far, 790 jurisdictions in 17 countries have declared a climate emergency, including very recently, in the last week of June, the city of Sydney. So again, my question for the councillors is, do you support a climate emergency declaration for the city of Melbourne?
Luke, thank you very much for your question. The chair of our portfolio, Councillor Cathy Oak.
Thank you for your question. I just wanted to note that actually I've received your correspondence. I've received a lot of correspondence from people interested in the City of Melbourne's stance with respect to the climate emergency, but also biodiversity and species extinctions emergencies as well. And I won't answer right now because I actually intend to raise the matter as an urgent business item later in the meeting tonight so that we can formally consider the notion of declaring a climate emergency.
Thank you, Luke. Well planned.
Thank you.
Serendipity is an amazing thing. Thank you. If there are no other questions at this time, we'll keep moving forward with our meeting agenda. Thank you very much. And I have the pleasure of calling on Councillor Oak to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Environment Portfolio. Thank you.
Yes, I'm not moving the urgent motion just yet. But yes, we've got one item of... we've got one agenda item under the Environment Portfolio, 6.1. It's a Waste and Resource Recovery Strategy 2030. I would actually like to call on the Manager of Engineering, I assume it is, Jenny Bailey, to provide a short presentation on this strategy.
Thank you for the opportunity to present on this strategy this evening. So firstly, I'd like to just say this has been a long journey from getting to where we started with to now, with ongoing refinements and opportunities. But we started this before there was a recycling crisis. We also started this before there was a real focus on a real community interest on waste, and a lot of that community interest was generated by the war on waste. So we've been working on it for a while. In summary, our vision is towards a zero waste city, and we've proposed what we think are some pretty tight targets, a 90% reduction of waste diverted from landfill by 2030, which is quite substantial, 20% reduction in household waste produced, and a significant reduction in greenhouse gas generated from waste. And I also note that a significant proportion of our climate action strategy is actually about managing waste. We've got three key areas that we're looking at, avoiding and reusing, collecting and recovering. And I would like to note here that the City of Melbourne is incredibly supportive of the waste hierarchy and preventing waste being generated at the beginning. We're also very conscious of our role in the City of Melbourne and our ability. We are the people that actually end up picking up the waste and taking it away, and that's where we've got to put a lot of our efforts. So we've got a lot of, in our strategy, advocacy initiatives where we're looking at trying to influence other players, of which the most important are the federal and the state government. One of our key elements is organic recovery and separation. The City of Melbourne has got different challenges from most other municipalities on this, primarily because of our significant commercial activity, particularly in the restaurant scene, plus we have the bulk of high-density living. So we're first thing we're wanting to do is undertake a trial to see how we can separate organics in medium density areas. We're also looking at how can we actually separate out organics in the high rise, which is significantly more challenging. And we're looking at the viability of incinerators or in-sink type uses, and then utilising the sewage system to actually take organics out of the city. And with that, there is a continual and ongoing need for behaviour change. We also are in the situation where in the city of Melbourne itself only collects less than 10% of the waste generated in the city. For those businesses that require more than our standard rubbish collection bin, which is, you know, one bin picked up once a week, those businesses are currently required to find their own independent waste collection service, and what that means is we have a lot of rubbish bins in the city being picked up by a lot of different waste providers. So what we're looking at doing is significantly expanding the communal hub system that we've already got, which enables people to use that centralised system, pay on a per-use basis. Those systems have compactor units in them, which means that we can compact the rubbish before taking it away, which also significantly reduces disruption, truck movements and greenhouse gases generated. The expansion of these hubs will also enable us to significantly improve our separation rates from for organics and recyclables by providing multiple bins. And it also doesn't preclude us from offering other specific... If we've got an area where we think there's a lot of soft plastics, we can probably separate those out as well. So we've got a real focus on that, and we think it's going to make a significant difference to our recovery of waste, the amenity in the city by reducing the number of rubbish trucks and movements, and also the significantly reduce the number of rubbish bins that sit in our laneways. There is a lot of work that needs to be done in the recycling area, and I don't need to tell anyone about our current recycling, our so-called crisis or our current lack of capability to take our recycled material. So we're working on that, and a lot of that work is advocacy work for us, as well as significant piece of work required to advocate to the state and to the feds for extended producer liability schemes. And it's when those schemes are in place that you will see, as Europe has, significant reductions in the actual generation of waste. So it's out of our control, but it is within our influence. We do have one area where we do have opportunity to influence the recycling sector is in actually using recycle materials ourselves, and we're doing some work with our civil engineering functions to look at how can we utilise materials, asphalt, concrete, all sorts of things that actually include recycled materials. That way we can increase the demand for recycled materials, increase the value of those, and make the recycling system more resilient.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Jenny? No. As I said... Oh, you do? Sorry. Councillor Riley has a question.
Jenny, can you just help me out on how are we going to get this strategy and education part of the strategy to the people of Melbourne? I mean, you've done some amazing work here and it's great, but always communicating it and telling everyone we are doing amazing things is not so simple. Have you got any thoughts there?
So there's two parts to the communication piece. One is actually working with... our residents who are actually generating waste and helping them know where to put their waste and helping them change their behaviour and be part of the solution. So we already have a range of programs and there's plenty of opportunity to expand those and we'll also be leveraging the capabilities of organisations like Sustainability Victoria who actually have been able to provide messages that go across the whole state because clearly we're interested in other municipalities but we've got resources that come from one municipality. In terms of the advocating piece, in terms of telling people what we're doing but also how do we influence others, we are incredibly fortunate in the City of Melbourne to have highly sophisticated communications teams who are already working on this particularly. They've done some really good work on our climate change work and this will fit in really nicely with that.
Thank you. Any other questions? No. Yep. Oh, yep, sorry, Councillor Rees.
Don't sit down yet, Jenny.
thanks very much, Councillor Oak. One thing we hear a lot about as councillors is complaints from people who live in the central city about truck movements through the city. Can you explain to us how this waste and resource recovery strategy will help deal with that issue?
Yeah. So the majority of the truck movements in the city are actually servicing the private sector who've got individual contracts with different waste providers. So you end up currently with a situation of a lot of different rubbish trucks. So you could have a lane and it might have 10 bins in it and each one of those bins is being serviced by a different provider. So you could be living in that in the apartment above that and it wouldn't be... it would be quite possible that you would be woken multiple times by rubbish trucks because they're just coming in to pick one rubbish bin up. Often the trucks themselves are half empty and the bins themselves are half empty. So if you replace that with a communal system whereby we only come and collect it when the bins are full, we're collecting it by one service provider and we're also compacting it, that will significantly reduce the number of trucks operating in the city, notwithstanding the fact that we operate in a free market and there is nothing that the City of Melbourne would want to do to actually restrict any of our people living in the City of Melbourne to contract with any waste provider that they want. So we will not be eliminating, and nor should we be eliminating, private vehicles in the city.
Thanks, Jenny. Certainly the news about the reduction in numbers of pickups is great news for people who get disturbed or woken by those heavy vehicles coming through
the city. I also think it's worth noting there's a big productivity story in this as well. We should be able to provide waste cheaper to all of those businesses out there. And that's something that we should always be looking at doing.
Okay. We have two people listed to speak. So I'll first call on Vincent Ryan. You've requested the opportunity to address the committee and we've also received a written submission as well. You've got you can speak for no more than 3 minutes and, as you know, the clock will beep you at 1 minute to go and then you need to finish at the three-minute mark. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, councillors. I'd like to laud council on the significant objectives of a 90% reduction in waste by 2030 and a 20% reduction in household strategy. However, I'd like to concur with the earlier questioner around the climate change emergency that we're currently within. Our experience of sometimes response from council and officers are a lack of a sense of this shared emergency. Indeed, from our perspective, the recycling crisis has been on the agenda for the last 30 or 40 years. Indeed, as a journalist at the Herald in 1988, I wrote a story on the big green bins, which people were worried about would actually generate too much litter. Subsequent to that, I've then followed the story extensively over the last 30 years or so and have seen the failure of co-mingling, the failure of education campaigns generally, and this is not a particular criticism of the City of Melbourne, but rather the lack of emphasis on avoid at the peak of the waste hierarchy strategy. I think that's generally reflected in the way that we've approached education, in the way that we've approached the collection of litter and recyclables. It's always perplexed me in my 30 or 40 years of working in both local government, state and federal government, how councils don't give each householder who wants them a compost bin, a worm farm or a bokashi bin. We tend to prefer a complex engineering solution that results in a green waste bin, and I understand council will vote for this tonight and I appreciate the complexity of your decision making in reaching that conclusion, and it's hard to avoid, but the reality is this is still not necessarily avoiding waste. It has to be central, council has to be more passionate about it, and it needs to partner more effectively with communities around composting and avoiding the generation of waste in the first place. And it doesn't need to be part of a general grants process. It needs to be in partnership, in strategic partnership with communities around things like the Repair Hub, the Kensington and Transition Town Kensington, and the Kensington Community Network. Our experience is when we suggest stuff, it gets shoved into a policy or a paper that then becomes part of a grants process that we have to apply for. When council comes up with the idea, they're happy to lead it. When we come up with the idea, it seems to be something that we still have to push for. So we'd like a much stronger collaboration on this ground. We'd like to see the declaration of a climate change emergency, and we'd like to see council more focused and keen on pushing education measures that Councillor Riley, because at the moment it's just not enough and the community is confused and concerned.
Thank you, Vincent. Are there any questions for Vincent? Yeah, of course.
To that. I have two goats because I couldn't get anywhere to put all the extra peelings and so forth. The goats do a great job, but they're not for the CBD.
Good on you, Councillor. It's a good start, though. If we all had goats, we'd be a lot happier.
Artemis Patici, you'd like to present on behalf of the South Bank Sustainability Group, and thank you also for your submission and continued interest in this strategy.
Thank you. Thank you, committee. And yes, indeed, this is a topic that's of big interest to us in South Bank, considering we're the most densely populated suburb in Australia, not only Melbourne, and in general about what happens to our city. Well done to the waste team for all the work that they've done until now. And we do acknowledge that version to version, the plan does look better. The strategy, I should say, it gets more and more fine-tuned. However, it feels like it's still not there in terms of having more specific targets, higher targets, and a better implementation action plan. The language now is veering more to cover the agenda items that were added in the last FMC meeting that this agenda item was presented. However, it's not talking about how it's going to get there. For example, the cigarette butts. It talks about the work that has been done until now. Great. How do we get it to the next step, and what is that next step? I also want to mention that, highlight, I should say, that every time this plan comes into consideration again, there's so much progress that happens in this field, so it makes it tougher for this plan to compete. That's why we need to be more ambitious and more and think bigger in terms of what we want to see out of our city and out of our municipality and everyone, all stakeholders included, involved into reducing waste from producing it to going into landfill. I've outlined in my submission specifics. I won't go through them. The overall sentiment is that we want to see higher targets. We want to see more of how we're going to get there. And I agree with the previous speaker as well that education is a big key and partnership is the key across all stakeholders. As the sustainability group, we do a lot of education with the community and we see such a big shift in behaviors and people come back and tell us how they've already changed what they're doing at home and how little waste they're producing now. So we can see by example and in practice that it works. It needs to happen in the right way. And surely stakeholders like industry are harder to get through. But again, with partnerships and with giving the right incentives, rewards, and where it needs to be penalizations, I'm sure we can see a much better result. Ooh, and because I have 30 seconds, I'll just quickly say that the waste to energy, that's another signaling point. If we can see about how we can repurpose our organic waste and use that natural whatever action, we can see better results. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any, I've got a couple of items that you raise in your submission that I might ask Jenny to respond to, if that's okay, very quickly, just so correct. My understanding is that the strategy does include, does encompass the issue of alternatives to plastic for dog waste and also the cigarette butt campaign in the advocacy piece, because we did discuss that. And I'll also highlight, and maybe you could also at the same time highlight that we have actually got in there a target about the single-use plastics as well.
So just on cigarette butts, we already collect cigarette butts and recycle them. So that's what we're currently doing. Mm-hmm. The plastic for dog bags, was that the other one? We haven't got the answer for that, but we will find it. It's in the strategy that we will get the best solution for that. I don't see it as being difficult, but we haven't got the answer to go into the strategy. And we've also suggested in the strategy that we should be banning unnecessary single-use plastic items. So that's in the strategy. And I believe, if my memory serves me right, oh, there's been that many iterations, I've lost track, that we've also got targets there for single-use plastic as well. So I do believe that I've read your submission. Thank you. It's incredibly comprehensive. And I appreciate the work that you do on that voluntarily at a short period of time. So we fully support the sentiments of your submission. And as we work our way through this, if we've got opportunities to overachieve on our targets, then we'll absolutely be doing that.
Thank you. There's no other questions. I will move a slightly amended resolution. I wonder if I should add in the cigarette, the last one. I think it is what it is. You're right. Okay, I call on a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Wood, Deputy Lord Mayor. Oh, yes, like Jenny, I feel like we've been going for a while on this. And in saying that, I acknowledge the huge amounts of work that Jenny Bailey, Manager of Engineering Services, who's had carriage of the waste strategy, acknowledge all the work that you've done and your team. Of which we do have some, we do have an excellent waste team at the City of Melbourne in engineering services, but also across the organisation there's a lot of really great innovative projects and projects and initiatives underway within sustainability, within our events team and other areas. So I acknowledge the work across the organisation to get us to the strategy that we have tonight. I certainly have sentiment and perhaps probably agree a lot with our two submitters that we probably could continue in changing this and ratcheting it up and getting it to another version. But I think that we need to endorse a strategy, and within that strategy there are quite a few items that capture the urgency and the implementation that you're seeking. I certainly agree, though, with your comments, and that maybe it is as a result of us working on this for so long and the change of environment that Jenny spoke about, that it is perhaps a little confusing in some parts because we have been playing a little bit of catch-up, but also trying to make sure that we are as ambitious as possible. So I think that we need to now move on to the implementation phase. We've got a strategy, we've got strong targets, it does meet, I believe, the ambition that we've been talking about in terms of approaching zero waste to landfill, certainly reduction in household waste, eliminating unnecessary single use plastics. And I acknowledge Councillor Riley, you and I have been talking about this since before the strategy process began. You know, what can we do, you know, within the environment that we have here in the capital city? So I think that having that action in there is an important step. Certainly the challenges around organic waste and not yet having a solution, it's you know, we can be ambitious and put zero, or we can put, you know, 100%, but we don't yet really have an answer. And so I think that having a trial in the residents that live in the low-rise communities, certainly we need to follow the lead of other councils that surrounding us that are already on board and are already collecting organic waste. We need to do that in our low-rise and then look at the options that Jenny spoke about for our high-rise apartments. I think that the solution is not yet there, but we've certainly got some ideas. But the Innovation Fund is an important piece of work. Really, that does need to be targeted at the priorities that are listed in the strategy, though. It's not just a fund for the sake of a fund. It's, you know, it needs to help us address our major issues. And getting the criteria and the process right for that fund is probably key activity for this year. And I think it answers maybe Vincent's point about how do we make sure that fund is as collaborative and as cooperative with the people in our community like yourselves who want to help solve this crisis, that we should think of it. Think of this fund as different to maybe our other grant funds, as you absolutely describe, as us giving some funds and then, you know, it takes a long time. And then I think we need to look at this innovation fund as trying to be as quick and nimble and addressing the urgent needs as possible. But on that point, Vincent, we certainly all discussed your submission earlier today, and we know that you did raise this, the repair hub, at previous meetings, and we have said at previous meetings it will be dealt with under the waste strategy, it will be dealt with under the Innovation Fund, and I acknowledge that we have been sort of pushing it along, which doesn't actually reflect our interest in the idea, and we are all actually on board the idea of a repair cafe. It's certainly been raised by many of us, different models, and there are other groups within our community, like the men's sheds that we support, that, you know, is there a model and working with other spaces and other organisations in our community to, with support, strong support from council, on repairing, reusing, repurposing materials. So we haven't added a specific amendment, or I haven't added a specific amendment about your submission, but that's not to say that we're not interested, and actually I will follow up after with this to make sure that we do move it along and we don't lose that idea of a repair cafe in our municipality. What else was I going to say? Sorry, I know I sort of was going off, but just to note on 9.3, I agree with Councillor Riley's and I think Councillor Reese's point about the communication plan and how we actually talk about what we're doing is really key. And so all of what we're doing is key, and it's really important we talk to all of the different stakeholders about how they can help reduce what they're doing, but help work with council to reduce what we're doing. But really importantly, as Jenny points out all the time, that we need to be advocating to other levels of government about in particular extended producer responsibility, and as we have for a long time advocating for a container deposit scheme in Victoria. These are two major things that need to change if we want to stop receiving the waste that we do at the end of the chain in the city of Melbourne. We can't control what the producers are, you know, what the materials that are being produced and the waste that are being produced in the items that we're consuming, but we certainly can advocate for change up the stream, and that's what 9.3 is about, about directing some of that advocacy this year in these two items. I will ask the seconder if you'd like to speak.
Thanks, Chair. So, if we can't get this right in terms of our responsibilities at a local government level, then it's we're failing in our duties. Obviously the context of the industry is not a good one, in that, you know, sort of sending our recyclables off to other countries seemed like a really smart way of dealing with recycled content. We thought that we were wise in creating essentially an export industry for the stuff that we didn't want, and getting that processed and then buying it back as stuff that we wanted. But of course, as our world becomes more populated, as that waste and resource material becomes more pronounced, and as other countries develop as nations, they get less inclined to accept our waste and they say no thanks anymore. So it's not only the China issue, but right across the board, Indonesia, Malaysia, anywhere that's accepting any of our materials is very close to saying no thanks. So essentially the China export crisis is really just the first domino. And what this presents is an opportunity for us to finally establish a domestic waste and resource recovery industry which can stand on its own two feet, where we price virgin materials appropriately, where we incentivise use of recycled content in anything that we can so that we create a viable market for those. I agree with Councillor Oak. I think it's time to get on and endorse the strategy. We could keep tinkering with this and improve it, but I think, you know, 90% of waste diverted from landfill by 2030 is a really ambitious target. I agree with our submitters, the implementation plan is going to be critical, because we've had aspirational targets in the past and we haven't met them, and that's not a commentary on City of Melbourne per se. Again, this is a tough space to get real change. From a finance and governance perspective, we've got to acknowledge that this is a real cost. So we're going to double the spend on our waste and resource recovery to $44 million by 2030. But the pleasing side of that is it's going to be largely offset to the tune of $21.5 million on avoided disposal fees. So that's primarily due to increased recycling. And also the really big one, which I think this strategy is going to be very ambitious about, is organics going to landfill. It's one where City of Melbourne leads in many, many areas, but there are lots of local governments who have dealt much better and much earlier with organics. More difficult for us with the fact that 80% of people live in apartments in City of Melbourne, but it's one which I know fellow councillors and our officers are very keen to drive a lot of change in. We trialled on-site organics processing in three apartment towers a couple of years ago. The pleasing result of that is when the trial finished, the body corporates, including the Hero Building, which Councillor Riley can speak about, adopted those on-site processing initiatives within their body corporate because they saw it as a great community initiative and a great way to reduce their impact. So priority seven, I think, is really critical about getting organics out of our waste stream and not going into landfill. And then on top of that, the upstream version of that is love food, hate waste. You know, we've got to eliminate that fact that we pack our fridges full of stuff and, you know, huge percentages of it goes rotten. You've got people starving, and then you've got people with way too much food that they're letting go to waste. We moved a motion last year now, I think, in terms of procurement, in terms of waiting tenders for recycled content. So that's about creating that end market, and that's where local governments can have a huge impact. And obviously if state governments also do the same, which I understand they have. Just, I mean, there's some small wins that have occurred already, though. With our smart bins, our solar smart bins, compactor bins, we're having about 80,000 to 90,000 collections a month just for those bin locations. That's down to about 14,500 collections per month because of the fact that they actually do compact. Obviously, the next step, what we want to see is we also want to see recycling of the content in those compactor bins. But that's a huge amenity impact. It's an efficiency gain. And, you know, frankly, I think it partners the best of smart city with some of these age-old issues. Councillor Oak touched on product stewardship. Priority 5, I think, is going to be critical. A lot of this is about advocacy. City of Melbourne does have a big brand. We can push people on these sorts of things. We've got national packaging targets at a federal level, so there's been some actually positive announcements from the federal government on some of these things. We've got the state e-waste bans in full swing, and there's going to be a lot of adjustment around how that impacts. Single-use plastics have been banned at QVM and the world didn't fall in. People have adjusted. We provide trolleys, we provide reusable bags, and people have just adjusted their behaviour. So these things can be achieved, you know, without sort of any real impact on the way people go about their lives. In fact, they enhance that sort of community and that social good outcome as well. Vincent, I feel for you because we had the last budget process and we did try and push for the repair hub to be in that budget. We just didn't get there. I think there's a strong will from councillors to see this funded and happening, because I just want to finish on the fact that, well, apart from the container deposit scheme, we've had a motion every second year trying to get movement on that. That's been extremely frustrating. But I think we do tend to go towards the big engineering solutions. And yes, they play a role, but a huge amount of waste can be avoided just at that household level or just at that business level. And, you know, it's funny, just like our meeting of the Urban Heat Island Effect is about planting trees, you know, introducing bokashi or worm farms might seem like really, really small actions, but multiplied by many thousands of times, they can make a massive difference and a huge chunk out of this waste management issue. So I'm very keen to see this endorsed. Let's get on with it. Let's try and meet that target of 90% of waste diverted from landfill by 2030. The implementation plan is going to be critical, but we really need to use this strategy as a tool to bring along our residents and our businesses with us, because we can't do this alone, otherwise it'll fail.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Are there any other councillors that would like to speak to the motion? Lord Mayor.
I think this is a very popular topic this evening because everybody's worked so hard on it and so important. Of course, local councils are roads, rates and rubbish. Who would have thought there would be so much to rubbish? But of course there is, because like you, Vincent, in the early 80s, my Year 8 project at school was about avoid... Well, I'm in there with you, don't worry. Avoid, reuse, recycle. And yet decades later, in my case, we are still talking about this. And that's why that sense of urgency now is just so important, because for too long we've moved too slowly. But I do acknowledge this is a major piece of work well done to our team, and that's both our executive and councillors. There have been some fantastic interactions just to keep pushing ourselves on how we can incorporate more initiatives, how we can think more creatively, how we can be more ambitious, and balancing that up with all the other responsibilities that we have. But we know this is absolutely central to our responsibilities as a council, but also we know we can play a major role in causing a positive impact in how we move on this as a community going forward. We know that governments, businesses, cities and individuals all have responsibilities to play. I think that's noted in the strategy in a good way, whether it's governing or influencing or delivering. And that's been set out well so that we can really understand what our role is, but what we're also looking for others to be able to do, and particularly where we can partner together. I note the comments that have already been made about our recycling system here. I think we all accept that it's absolutely in crisis, that we are experiencing a market failure. We went about it backwards, really, didn't we, as the Deputy Lord Mayor just said. And into that market failure, we absolutely need levels of government to step in and create a disconnect and a new way forward that then we can leave to the private sector to keep pursuing. And that's precisely what we're doing at the moment. We know it's going to take collective action, as I said, to mitigate the effects of waste on our environment and our economy, and it's absolutely wonderful tonight for us all to be here, community, our team and councillors, and hear the words, let's be more ambitious, more urgent, create more detail for everyone on how we can get there, and that includes education and communication. And with that sort of endeavour and the mutual commitment, I feel confident we can get there, and that's why I'm really happy to propose or support this motion tonight. I'm not proposing.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there other councillors who'd like to speak? Councillor Watts.
I would like to support this. My colleagues have spoken so eloquently. I'd like to make the point, though, that I think a very strong part of the solution has to be the people of this city. I was at a meeting this morning with the East Enders residents group. They were all concerned about the rubbish on the streets. They were all concerned about the cigarette butts. They all care a lot. And I think, properly handled, we can actually use our people as a resource. But I'm also mindful, and this is heresy to an extent in a city such as ours, that we're very dependent on a very viable retail scene also. And I personally am concerned about the necessity of consuming less on so many levels. But that doesn't sit well with our society. We do like our products. So the reference is already made to the way in which producers have to take responsibility for that which contain their products are conveyed in is very important. So I think that the City of Melbourne is doing a really good job. I think our waste strategy is rigorous. I think it's comprehensive. But the one thing that it really has to work on, I think, is getting our people on side. And we have people here who care deeply, and we have people internally who care deeply. We've just got to engage the wider population in supporting us in this strategy, and I'm confident we can do that because this city is full of really smart people. As Chair of Knowledge City, I would say that, but the reality is it's true. There will be solutions, and solutions that we have not yet thought of. I suspect we can also borrow from overseas. I'm very excited, because I'm a recycler from way back, that the City of New York has been engaged in a market recycling, abandoned and goods that have been thrown away. They've been doing it for 30 years, selling on to create actual monetary benefit for the city or various social welfare groups. So there are things that we're not doing in our city that we could, but one of the major things we're not doing, I think, is engaging our people adequately. So I'm very excited about the prospect of ramping up that effort here in the city.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillor Rees, you'd like to speak to the motion.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. I'll be quite quick. I want to say that I commend the City of Melbourne officers for all their hard work in producing what is an ambitious document. I also want to congratulate Councillor Oak, Deputy Lord Mayor and the Lord Mayor for your work in bringing this forward and for your ambition. Zero waste by 2030 is where we want to get to, and this document tonight maps out how the City of Melbourne can play its part in getting us there. The truth is, of course, that the City of Melbourne can't get there on our own, and that's why I'm very pleased that there is an amended motion being put up this evening, which includes a reference to the need for Australia to have an extended producer responsibility scheme. Victoria needs a container deposit scheme. I don't know how much clearer we need to make that to the Victorian Andrews government or the federal Morrison government. I mean, how many more piles of tyres do we need to burn, creating plumes of smoke that you can see from out of space? How many more factories stuffed full of rubbish do we need to burn down in some of the worst fires that the state has ever seen? like, we are here, we are the closest level of government to the people, we are doing our bit, we need other levels of government to work with us to pull their finger out and get this done.
Hear, hear. Are there any other speakers who'd like to... Are there any other councillors who'd like to speak to the motion? No. Well, as the mover of the motion, I guess I would like to just close by saying, from what I've heard, absolutely from our submitters, from our councillors, we are committed to an ambitious strategy. There is a lot of ambition in the strategy, but we need to be really clear with our communications. We need to actually tell the community what we are doing and what they should be doing. I think it isn't entirely, you know, we need to be bolder and stronger in our comms, you know, and I think that actually does relate to the cigarette butt issue. It's not just about that we're collecting them and that we're recycling them. I think we need to actually get back on and be doing the blitzes. You know, we need to be actually stop. We need to actually stop the cigarette butts from being dropped in the first place, rather than just collecting them. And I think that was the point there. So we'll certainly be picking that one up. I want to note that I am, and I'm just again picking up on something from the South Bank submission, that I am supporting the strategy. With the references to waste to energy, only because we've edited it quite significantly to make it clear that we're not considering that until the 2023 review. There is still a table and it talks about waste to energy, but we certainly, that's not part of the implementation plan considerations in the short term. And yeah, I think that I agree with everyone saying we need to just get on with it and let's make this ambition a reality. So all those in favour, put their hands up. Well, it's passed unanimously. Thank you. It's declared the motion carried. I now call on Councillor Leppert to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Arts, Culture and Heritage Portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Roads, rates, rubbish and music. Would any councillors like a presentation on this item? We are considering the Melbourne Music Week 2019 program. No? I invite Chris Thrum to address the committee for up to 3 minutes. Thank you again, Chris.
Thank you, Councillor Rowan Leppert, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation. I support the recommendation from management that we go ahead with the 10th anniversary of Melbourne Music Week. Melbourne Music Week is one of the most iconic events that the City of Melbourne produces. It's up there with Melbourne Fashion Week as well. And it's important too that the City of Melbourne realises the importance of the music industry, and as such it collaborates to a great extent with the music industry. There's always a great buzz around town in late November when the Melbourne Music Week is happening. And it's important, too, to recognise the creative ambition of the offices and the City of Melbourne in creating the fantastic music hubs that always creates great interest around the City of Melbourne when Melbourne Music Week is occurring. As I said before, there's always a great buzz that occurs in the industry, and all the rock dogs and the musicians and all the people in the industry are always very thankful for all the time and effort that the City of Melbourne puts into putting on such a great event. Utilising the Melbourne Town Hall in the last few years has been a great initiative of the City of Melbourne as well. And I know for a fact that musicians are always excited to perform on the great grand organ in the Melbourne Town Hall as well. I'm looking forward to what happens in the next few months in terms of like programming and when the program's released in about September. And I'd like to congratulate the City of Melbourne and the officers for all the great work that they do in putting on such a fantastic and fine event. And I'm sure that the musicians as well and everyone in the industry is very thankful as well.
Thank you so much, Chris. Any questions for Chris? No. Thanks, Chris. I will move the motion in the form of the recommendation from management, and I call on a councillor to second it. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. Committee with an E, fantastic. Chris always does such a wonderful job as salesperson. I'm not sure I can do much better. I'd like to add my support for this event to the words that Chris has just put forward and sincerely thank our team, Elise and everyone who works in Events Melbourne to produce this remarkable festival. I wasn't a councillor 10 years ago, but I was certainly hyper aware of the political context that brought about our first music week, and Councillor Oakes on my left might have more to say about that. She was instrumental in bringing it about, and a year after she's received her 10-year medal for work in local council, we are considering the 10th anniversary of that project. I'm immensely proud to have been the portfolio holder carrying on that mantle, but I want to acknowledge that with Cubic and other venues that reflect that 10-year journey, particularly that first year starting point where Councillor Oak and others created a program that employed people like Elise, this has been quite an incredible 10-year journey. I'm really excited about the idea of 10 years of Melbourne Music Week and revisiting some of the venues, revisiting some of the created venues like Cubic down at Burirung Mar, where it was. Is that where it still is? I've got to read the report in front of me. And the nostalgia added to those new audiences and making this a bigger and better than ever Melbourne Music Week. I'm also really excited about the prospect of delivering our first carbon and waste neutral Melbourne Music Week. That is a massive achievement. There's a huge amount of work that goes into that. I know that there's plenty of work happening now and that will happen afterwards to acquit that. But it is really exciting to think that we're moving our premier events to really world-class and leading carbon-neutral positions, and Melbourne Music Week's right at the front of that list. Also really excited that we're opening a 10-day, 10-year festival with the venues. Probably stealing Councillor Oak's thunder again, but the venues are the backbone of Melbourne's music industry. Opening this festival by opening the doors of Melbourne's music venues is so fitting, and I'm really excited that that's how we're shaping the entire festival. November's a time when music's heard all around the city. People like Chris bring music to our streets all parts of the year. We are a musical city all year round, but Music Week really is such a wonderful celebration of the best of us and an opportunity for government to partner with the industry and celebrate everything that is great about music in Melbourne. So I'm really looking forward to our 10-year anniversary, Lord Mayor.
I love Melbourne Music Week. Congratulations to the team and everybody involved. 10th anniversary, amplify the program, the excitement, the engagement, accessibility, etc. by 10 this year. It's going to be absolutely brilliant. I just really wanted to share some stats with people because music really is at the soul of Melbourne, and congrats to everybody that's been involved in making this happen and supporting it over the years. But every weekend in Melbourne, more than 112,000 people will go to a live music venue to listen to music. That's what makes us the live music capital of the world. It's so important as well for us as individuals, for us as a city and a community and expression of our culture, and also as an outward expression to the world on the things that we find important. And music is right at the heart of that. It's so exciting to see. We're often referred to as the sporting capital, but I think that these stats really show that that we're right up there, and of course having that mantle of live music capital of the world. We're also, as part of the program, incorporating in offers and activities with our retail and our restaurants and cafes, and really building on that economic activity so that everybody benefits. And just noting that the nighttime economy, we have the fastest growing nighttime economy in Australia, and it grew by about 8% last year, and that growth didn't come from sales of alcohol. It came from people being involved in activities like listening to music, and we're willing to pay for it and we're willing to support it, and this is another example of the city doing precisely that. 31,000 people are employed across our nighttime economy, and a lot of those are music venues. $3.5 billion in value to the city over the year. So to showcase our creds across the venues and the talent and the delivery and the enjoyment and the support of music being right at the heart of Melbourne is what Melbourne Music Week is all about. Congratulations, and I'm really happy to help support it this evening.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Other councillors wish to contribute? Sure. Councillor Roach.
I should, only because, it's not compulsory, but I should acknowledge the team certainly in putting together the program that we're endorsing tonight and wholeheartedly endorse it and really throw my excitement behind what this celebration will be of the last 10 years. It's interesting because my brain going, is it 10 years or is it not 10 years? And the questioning is all about SLAM and the Save Live Australian Music, which essentially led to the resolution that I put to start Melbourne Music Week. And it was on the same day of the SLAM rally when 10,000 people and more were on the streets marching to show their support for the live music industry in Melbourne that I put the resolution. It was exactly the same day. So we ran the first Music Week of the same year, but the 10th anniversary of SLAM is then in the following, like February or March, when the actual rally occurred. So whilst that technically it's the 10 years of Music Week aligns with the 10 years of SLAM, SLAM's 10-year anniversary will be early in 2020, which, it allows us to reflect on our time, and then it also allows SLAM to then really reflect on what the 10 years have meant to the live music industry, which is essentially what Music Week is all about. It's not about another music festival, whilst it is a music festival and it's the most amazing one because of Elise's guidance and ingenuity in what she's done over the last 10 years. But it is specifically an event about celebrating why Melbourne is the live music capital of the world. And that is about our labels, music labels that are born and bred and owned and operated in Melbourne. It's about our venues, which is why the Live Music Safari is really, really one of the most important things of the program to me. It's about our community radio. Sydney, no other state, no other probably place in the world has the community radio that we have in Melbourne. So your PBS and Triple R and all of the rest. All of that adds to it. And also, obviously, our musicians. And really importantly, the program, whilst we've got unique venues and we've got unique hubs and we're playing on that uniqueness of Melbourne, the program over the last 10 years has really, really strongly highlighted and spotlighted our labels and our venues and our radio and our musicians. And I really love that the people who have been involved, who were involved at the very beginning, like Helen and Quincy and Patrick, are all involved and still involved and will be involved. So it's exciting to me, but it's scary that it is 10 years. But it's okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other contributions to this debate? Councillor Watts.
There's a line in here that really is important to me. A large program of free and ticket events, but the free bit is very important because although Melbourne has the reputation for being a livable city and a sporting city, I like the idea that we're a very accessible city and people can access the cultural life of this city in as many ways as we, as a city council, can organise for them. So this is a very important matter, I think, that audience is considered. Chris Thrum spoke so eloquently about how important it is for the musicians, and I speak on behalf of the audience, since I play nothing at all. But it's very important. We listeners of the world appreciate this program very much.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Any other contributions to the debate? No. In that case, I'm going to put the motion to the vote. Please raise your hands if you agree with it. Thank you. That's unanimous. I will hand over to another councillor now. Who's that? Deputy Lord Mayor. No? Right. Councillor Louis. Apologies.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. There's one report from management for the consideration under the Prosperous City portfolio. Agenda item 6.3, post-travel report by Lord Mayor Sally Capp to Bandung, Jakarta in Indonesia, Guangzhou, Nanjing, Tianjin and Beijing in China, May 2019. Would any council like a presentation? No, no presentation. Long slideshow. In that case, can I call on? There is one request to speak. Can I call on Chris Thrum, who's requested the opportunity to address committee on this matter? And Chris is well known to everybody, and he certainly knows the rule. We don't have to explain to Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Kevin Louie, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation. I'll be very brief. Congratulations, Lord Mayor, on a fantastic trip and one of the most detailed, comprehensive reports that we've ever seen presented to the City of Melbourne as well. Did a lot of great work there. And it's important to have great relations with friends in Indonesia and China as well. And so kudos to you.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you for all your support always. Can I allow myself to move? Oh, sorry. Do you want to move? Or? Okay. Lord Mayor, welcome.
You have a seconder.
Seconder?
Did you second?
I'll have the second.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry for stuffing you up there, Councillor Louie, and thank you. Thanks, Chris, for your support. And I'd like to kick off in moving this motion by acknowledging the efforts of our team, our international team led by David Livingston, and I can see Shane McElroy here as well, and to everybody involved, the preparation for the thoughtfulness that went into the program and the dedication and professionalism that also went into the delivery really was fantastic. So thank you very much. And the success of the program is very much a reflection of your efforts and your leadership. So I do appreciate that, as we all do. We had an amazing trip. It was my first one as Lord Mayor. It's the first time I've done a travel report. It was an absolute pleasure. It was an honour to represent the City of Melbourne in those cities and in those environments and the discussions and activities that we had. I'm very proud, as everyone knows, of the City of Melbourne and the work that we do, and so the opportunity to take a lot of our leadership into those conversations and also have the opportunity to learn was absolutely fantastic. As you can see in the report, we really covered off a number of topics across a lot of cities in a short period of time. It was we hit the ground running and we kept going at that pace. I guess there were two elements to the type of activity. I'm going to touch on both of them. One was very much the government-to-government interactions, and the other one were the activities where we could really support our local businesses and also interest back into Melbourne. The sorts of topics discussed in government-to-government were very much the hot topics that we are facing here in our city as well. Smart city, innovation, environment, urban and city planning, transport and livability. We were received so openly with a huge amount of respect. We were very welcomed, and to me that really indicated the credibility and regard with which Melbourne is held by governments overseas. And I say that so that I can reflect again back on the hard work of the organisation and the people within this organisation over a very long time to really set up those relationships and that reputation. So congratulations. It's really important, I think, that as a council we keep building platforms and bridges for us as a council and for our citizens as well to be able to grow and to learn and to keep raising the bar on what we can do and set new benchmarks. And trips like these really do give us the opportunity to take our minds out of our everyday. Not to say that's not important, but we can get very caught up in our world, and to be able to look at what other cities are doing and have those conversations that bring real insights is an absolute gift. In terms of the business part of the agenda, the main focus of that was a startup Nexus Summit in Nanjing, and it was a resounding success. And I really acknowledge the hard work, and I see Katrina McKenzie's here as well, of all of the team here in Melbourne and our partners to bring together in relatively short time a competition to identify startups to travel with us overseas to Nanjing and then compete in a an innovation forum and summit there that resulted in over $100,000 in investment, initial investment being made. It resulted in a number of business connection and mentors. Three companies have already been invited back. We have a summit that we're planning for next year, and to have a number of mature companies but also young companies on that trip also learning from each other, it really was a fabulous environment and opportunity, and I think also outcomes. That was very much predicated also on the fact that we had cooperation and participation across four other municipalities, Ballarat, Whitehorse and Maribyrnong. And together, we were really able to make a very, very positive impact also through a Mayor's Summit there as part of the Jiangsu Victoria 40th anniversary. One conversation in particular still sticks out whenever I think of the trip, and that was a young guy who has a startup company who, after the summit, came up to me and said that he had never imagined the possibility of being able to engage in a market like China. And not only has he had that experience, but he feels he then has a platform from which he can jump very successfully and also attract interest and investment back into his company from there. And he said it had basically opened up a whole new world and made him feel very excited about the possibilities for the future for him and also through him right across our economy and community. So it's those sorts of conversations that really make you realise how worthwhile it is for a city council to be providing those opportunities, those bridges into possibilities for the businesses that exist within our municipality. And so I was very proud to be part of that and all of the efforts that that our team had put into making that happen. So well done. Of course, the opportunity to learn, to participate and prosper in global markets is what we're about as an organisation, and as I said, what we're about creating for our citizens and businesses. That's what this trip represented. Thank you very much for the support of councillors and council in going over there, and I'm really pleased to be able to put this motion tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. I seconded it. Lord Mayor, I warmly congratulate you on a very, very successful trip. And certainly five cities, two countries is no mean feat to get results out of. But I think more importantly, I think people underestimate the standing of a mayor-to-mayor or of the Lord Mayor of Melbourne opening doors as... I think I'm noticing in your report where Monash University have actually gained ground by having you provide the door opening on their behalf. So in terms of the report, I think, as I said, a picture tells a thousand words, and I think that it's sort of you brought us on the visit with you as we go through each of those pictures and read through your activities. But most importantly, I think the activity that you undertook certainly aligns very much with what Melbourne and what Melbourne's business agenda is, and particularly with your meeting with China Summit in terms of negotiating or promoting extra flights into Melbourne. Certainly a direct benefit to Melbourne and also to Guangzhou at the same time. But the importance, I think, as I said, what's underestimated is the door-opening potential of the Lord Mayor of Melbourne getting access to the mayor of, whether it's Guangzhou with a population of 17, 18 million people, Shanghai or Tianjin, or Nanjing with, I think, 8 million people. So in terms of getting access, you certainly got to the very highest level. But at the same time, I think all the activity you undertook certainly was very, very constructive and very, very successful as well. And certainly the photos look hugely enthusiastic. Right, everybody. Thank you. So, any further speakers? I saw.
Yeah,
Councillor Ryan.
Thank you, Councillor. Yes, congratulations, Lord Mayor. It is not easy to do so many visits in 8 days. So you've done a remarkable job. And but the one that I liked, after there was lots of good stuff in here, but the one about WeChat, I think that it's so timely that WeChat does have an office in Melbourne, seeing that we just recently launched Alipay only a few nights ago and got about 150 people coming in working out how they can work with us with the Alipay app. So WeChat was a pilot for the City of Melbourne, first that has been done before, and it's just been so accepted by the Chinese community and us as well. So making contact there, I thought, was one that we could perhaps get them, entice them to come. So well done. The whole visit was extraordinary. Mm. So congratulations.
Any further speakers? No? No further speakers? Mayor, do you want to... Finished? No. In that case, could I put the motion to a vote? All those in favour? Unanimously passed. Thank you. Can I now call on the Lord Mayor Sally Capp to resume the role of chair for the remainder of the meeting? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Louis. Okay, well, that concludes our reports from management to be considered this evening. Thank you very much. There are no items of general business to be considered either. So that leaves me to ask councillors, are there any items of proposed urgent business this evening?
Yes. I'd like to... I've never put... Some... Yeah. Do I ask or do you ask? I'd like to move that the Future Melbourne Committee resolves that the matter of Melbourne declaring a climate and biodiversity emergency meets the criteria for urgent business, do I keep reading, as upcoming council initiatives could be guided by this decision, and it's arisen since the distribution of the agenda and cannot safely or conveniently be deferred until the next council meeting.
And I note Councillor Wood, our Deputy Lord Mayor, is seconding the motion. Would the mover like to speak to the motion, please? Oh, sorry. No, I'm not doing... Well, we don't have to do that bit. Thank you. Given that we've got a mover and a seconder, we're going to put that motion to the vote that we consider this as an urgent item. And that is unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thank you, councillors. First time I've done that one, so thank you. No, it hasn't been. We're just doing it for consideration. So hang on to your enthusiasm. We're moving to the next thing. And I'm calling on Councillor Oak to move a motion.
That's really long, and apologies to everyone. But councillors have received this item, so I move the item on the screen.
I'm looking for a seconder to that motion. Got Councillor Wood. So, Councillor Oak, I'm calling on you to speak to the motion as the mover. Thank you.
Whew, yes, well, as I said, it wasn't necessarily planned to raise it tonight, but I think that given our... we have certainly been discussing the idea of declaring a climate emergency for many, many months at Council, and certainly we could have moved it at any time, but I believe it is urgent to declare an emergency for climate change and also for biodiversity. Tonight, given we were talking about the waste strategy earlier and we're talking about a comms campaign, we've also got other initiatives within our council plan where we're talking about advocating, especially around our climate mitigation strategy. And I guess have been frustrated, as have our community, and I've received a lot of communication about what the City of Melbourne's stance is around climate emergency, and I feel that whilst we are absolutely acting as if it is an emergency, we're not letting the community understand or know that is what we're doing. So this resolution is important to me because I think that I personally absolutely acknowledge that we are in a state of emergency with respect to climate change. We are on track to far exceed the 1.5 degrees increase that the, you know, thousands of scientists acknowledge that, you know, past that point and we're in dire circumstances. We need to do far more action at all levels of government, across the community, industry, to actually invest in the urgent action and urgent interventions to turn that curve and get below 1.5, if at all possible. It's scary if we don't. Likewise, you know, the recent report around 1 million species of immediate risk of extinction, with many within the next 10 years, that is really, really concerning to me. The two coupled together makes it absolutely a compelling reason to declare an emergency on both issues. It's something that I'm asked, again, as I said, personally, what do I think? But also, what does City of Melbourne think? And I think that I can say, I hand on heart believe that we should be acknowledging that as an emergency on both fronts, but I think it's important that the City of Melbourne does too. We are acknowledged, as I say in this item, we've been leading with respect to action around climate change for a long time, and we've been leading on projects that I'm sure the Deputy Lord Mayor will mention, but one that he certainly has led around the Melbourne Renewable Energy Project. I think that is showing action at the local level that should be followed at the federal level. We've certainly been acting with respect to the urban forest strategy and around nature in our city, and our biodiversity work, I think, is a really great example to show to the community and to all levels of government about how we can increase nature in our city, but do so with biodiversity at its core. And that is really important for people, but also for animals and plants. And if we want to be a livable city, we need to understand what we can do within our municipal boundaries around biodiversity. So, and that's not just about, you know, urban farming, but it is about, you know, critical issues. So, I'm trying to remove the emotion from it, but I recently had to speak in response to the Fridays for Future collective internationally, and it's a similar group to our climate strikes here in that we've seen here in Australia. We've had thousands of young people take to our streets demanding action. And that should not be dismissed as, oh, my God, kids taking off time off school. It's actually really quite... you know, something that we need to take seriously. If young people are willing to step away from their education to tell leaders to actually do something, we shouldn't dismiss them as bludges or wasting of time or dismissing of their education. It is actually something we should be taking seriously. Sorry, this is where I get emotional. Which is why, importantly, nine, we should be encouraging these young people to come and talk to us about their issues, not dismissing them and not, you know, putting them out as some, you know, rebels, but we should actually be listening to them, because we're obviously not acting as they are asking us to. So let's hear from them. Are we actually doing as much as we should? And so that's about inviting the youth, the future leaders, to come and talk to council at a future council briefing about their concerns, and so that we can actually respond, but more importantly, to show that we're listening to them as well. And the reason I get emotional when I think about that is when I think about my daughter, and I want to know, what am I actually doing for Charlie? And if we don't declare an emergency, I don't think I can, hand on my heart, say that we're doing enough. So, I don't know. Do I hand it to Aaron, or do you?
No, I can say that. Thank you, Councillor Oak. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And thanks to Councillor Oak for... what I think is a well-drafted motion. It's probably probably the longest motion that we've had seen it before City of Melbourne, I would think, might take the cake. But it does so because it touches on all the things that we're doing already. And we had a pretty robust discussion today amongst councillors about the word emergency, because, you know, even for all of us who have supported really strong action on climate, on water, waste, energy, biodiversity, you know, climate adaptation, mitigation, right across the board, you know, we're easily one of the more active councils when it comes to advocacy, when it comes to action. But there was a lot of talk around the word emergency and what that actually does to generate more action, and there is, you know, a viable and you know, just train of thought that says that people only respond so much to the really fear part of this, that long-term fear neither motivates them long-term or brings out the best in people. So there's that tendency to kind of shut down or put your head in the hands and say it's not happening, or the tendency to resort to just protecting yourself. So hope and optimism are actually really important things in this, and what a renewable energy future looks like, and what a city that's better for walking, and a city that has more green buildings, and what that does for health, what that does for community interaction, what supporting farmers' markets does for the people that produce the produce, so on and so on. So there was a lot of talk around whether emergency, you know, is the sort of word that we want to talk about. The reason I'm supporting this is because I can't personally lie straight in bed and not support it, because I know that when I talk to people, I say we are in deep trouble and we need to be on that sort of emergency or crisis footing. And that's not about trying to scare people. It's actually about sort of how you resource things, how you push towards targets, and what resources are required. And it also sends a message to our community that not only are we taking action, but we take this extremely seriously as well. So our water storages at Melbourne at the moment in this very, very cold city of ours are just over 50%. So that's similar to the Millennium Drought. What we know is we're getting more frequent droughts, and we're getting droughts of greater intensity, and they're lasting for longer. Brown Brothers, who had been in our great state for 130 years, have shifted their entire operations to Tasmania because they can't get the conditions to grow those cool climate wines anymore. The Bass Coast Shire have had 33 metres of coastal erosion because of these increased intensity of storm surges and tidal events, and their surf club is no longer usable, and they're going to have to move it back. So these aren't sort of things that are going to happen in 10 or 20 years' time or 30 years' time. We've got lawsuits, rightly, from homeowners impacted in unprecedented Sydney storms a couple of years back, saying, well, hang on, why wasn't I told that this sort of thing was going to happen? And then there's that talk about, well, Australia's only responsible for a small part of emissions, but we're actually on track for 2030 to be responsible for 13% of global emissions. So that's no longer sort of that get out of jail card that some people use to say, well, we're not much of the problem, so we really shouldn't move on this sort of thing. The Reserve Bank, the company directors, the World Bank, so many organisations have now talked about fiduciary duty in terms of directors and the sort of financial responsibility that people have to act and to inform. Rio Tinto, BHP, not exactly sort of organisations you'd be accusing of being green left-wing think tanks. They want a price on carbon. So my sort of reticence around the word emergency was more about, does this move people forward and does this enable us to take action? But in terms of who's moving on addressing climate change, it's more easy to ask about who's not moving on addressing climate change, and unfortunately that's our federal government. So our national leadership does many good things on climate action. They not only don't do things, they actually stand in the way of things being done, and I think that's sort of the worst sort of action that you can take, is you can disagree with something but then step out of the way and let those people that want to take action get on with it. Don't confuse the everyday person in bringing out all sorts of different data. Don't be cute with words, because it disrespects the everyday person. The next question would be, well, why are we doing this? And we're representing our ratepayers. What our ratepayers clearly say, they're the ones who elected us to be here, is that they want strong action on climate change. So if anyone says, well, why are you moving on this kind of thing, we can say, well, we're representing our electorate. And then Councillor Oak kindly mentioned MREP. So I feel really confident that with the Melbourne Renewable Energy Project, you know, we're 100% renewable energy offset for our entire electricity load. You know, we effectively built a wind farm just outside of Ararat that we haven't stopped there. MREP 2 is now about three quarters of the way through, and it's not about our electricity load, it's about now us using our influence and our intelligence and the path that we've sort of ground truth to now enable major corporates to go down that same path. So again, the buying group, who I can't reveal here because officers will be very upset if I do that, again, they aren't, you know, community groups or groups that are fired up necessarily about, you know, local climate action. They're just seeing the huge economic impact on their businesses, the need to build resilience in things like our electricity market, and the fact that you can't deny the science. So it's not about believing in science. Science isn't about belief. Science is about hard data. And again, you can argue with what's going to happen in 30 years' time. You can't argue what's already happened in the last 30 years. So I thank Councillor Oak for her passion and her drive to keep pushing on this. I feel somewhat ashamed that I was reticent about the word emergency because I've spent my entire career in this space. And I think my reticence only comes with the fact that Andrew Bolt wrote me up 2 weeks ago. And you always then tread so carefully when it comes to these kind of things because you're worried about the sort of commentary that you'll receive personally. But some things are bigger than, you know, what can happen to you personally. So I'm very proud to support this evening.
Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Watts?
I think my colleagues have again been so eloquent. There's already little I could add, but I do need to say that the exchange that we've just heard about with Andrew Bolt induces a sort of self-censorship, and that has to be resisted, and I'm pleased to say that my colleagues are resisting. Now, language is a very important element in what we're discussing here, and I think in this instance the language, the term that we've used, emergency, is absolutely spot on and accurate. So I'm very pleased to see this here. In these days of fake news and exaggeration, it's simply not the case that we are exaggerating here. We are in a very dire situation. And as we are a level of government which is closest to the people, I think we have an obligation to actually tell it the way it is, and we are. The second point that I would like to make is that this motion actually shows respect for the young people who will actually have to deal with a mess that we are fighting. Councillor Oak has the children, the young children, and I have the grandchildren, and I feel very strongly that we have to do something in a very public and a very insightful and a very strong way. And this is a very excellent motion, and I commend my colleagues for bringing it forward.
Let's do it. I'm putting the motion. Any other speakers? No, good. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour of this motion, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. I declare that motion carried. Well done. Now, it's not over yet. It is now that time of the meeting where we have 15 minutes for any other questions from the public. And so if you do have a question at this time, I went through the procedure earlier, but if you've got a question, please raise your hands and we can invite you to the lectern. No questions? Well, it's been another jam-packed agenda, councillors, and the team here at Melbourne City Council, thank you very much. I want to thank members of the public who attended this evening. We really appreciate your interest and participation in our democracy here in the City of Melbourne. To management and staff, as always, thanks for your efforts. To councillors, it's another wonderful Tuesday. Thank you, and look forward to seeing you all again soon. But I am declaring the meeting closed. Deputy Lord Mayor will be pleased to know at 7:02. You can go, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.